Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is Mem Beis. We are on Mem Aleph Amud Beis, and we're going to be starting with the words Amarav. It's five lines from the bottom of the Amud, beginning of the line. And the Gemara is commenting on a Mishnah. The Mishnah Mem Aleph Amud Aleph discusses a Mecham. You have a water urn and Pinahu, and what you did is you removed it. Now, it's not totally clear exactly what that means, you removed it. The Mishnah reads, if you look back at Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, the bottom Mishnah, Mecham Shepinah, Lo Yitin Lasochot Sonein. So the Mishnah says that when you have this kettle urn and you removed it on Shabbos, so Lo Yitin Lasochot Sonein, you're not allowed to put cold water in it. Bishul Shechamu, in order that the cold water becomes hot. Aval No Sein, Hu Lasochot. But what you could do is you could put in it, Ola Socha Kos, or into a cup, Kedei Lav Shiron, in order to just simply take the chill off the water. The Mishnah in of itself is very clear. In the Gemara yesterday, immediately after the Mishnah, asked a very simple question. What exactly does the Mishnah mean? The Gemara offered two pshatim. The first pshat is Rav Ada Bar Masna. And the second pshat is the pshat of Abaye. The Abaye's pshat starts on the top of the Amud Beis. Four lines from the top. Amar Abaye, Hachi Kamar. And Abaye offered this as a pshat in the Mishnah. Hamechem Shepinahu v'yesh bo mayim chamim. It means as follows, that when you have a urn, and what you did is that you took it off the eish. So in other words, it's a kli rishon, and it is removed from the fire. So lo yisa lo socha mayim huatim v'shvil shichamu. What you can't do is you can't put a little bit of water in, because even though it has been removed off the fire, nevertheless, it is a kli rishon, and since it's a kli rishon, it still has the ability to cook, so you can't put in a little water. Aval nosa lo socha mayim merubim kedei lav shiram. However, if what you do is plan on putting in a lot of cold water, so now the end product is going to be that they're just simply going to be warming the water, but you're not going to be cooking the water, so that would be fine. And then Abaye continues, as it's Pshat in the Mishnah, Umechem Shipana Mimenu Mayim, if on the other hand, you remove the contents of the water from this pot, meaning it was an urn of hot water that you took off the fire, and you remove the water from this urn, so now, lo yisan lesocha mayim kol ikar. Now you're not allowed to put any water in it. Why not? Because what's going to happen now is that you're going to be doing something to the pot itself, and that is siruf. Now, what is siruf? Siruf basically is the final process regarding the metal. Meaning what happens is that when you have metal and you want to work the metal, so what you do is that you heat up the metal nice and hot, and then you got it to the point now where it's somewhat pliable, and you basically shape into whatever shape you want. And in order to make sure that it maintains that shape, so then what you're going to do is you're going to throw cold water over it. And this is the process of tziruf. In terms of Shabbos, what malacha are you violating? So if you take a look at the top Rashi in the Amud, he writes that v'nosan socha tzonim machzikin esakli v'zuhi gemar malachtan. So Rashi over here describes something like makib bepatish. It's the final stage in the preparation of this particular keli. And so therefore, you are basically makib bepatish. You are finishing it up. And that would be the malacha if, in fact, you put any water in there. This is the pshat that was offered by Abaye in the Gemara. Now, the Gemara then went through a little bit back and forth between Rav and Shmuel, and then the Gemara quoted the following Amar Rav. Amar Rav, Loshanu el lahavshir aval atzarif aser. The only thing that would be permitted is only if you are going to be just simply taking the chill off the water, meaning to say that you pour a lot of water in. Now, Shmuel is of the opinion that you can even do tziruf. Now, the Gemara immediately reacts to that comment of Shmuel. What are you talking about? Meaning, that's exactly the isser that one cannot do. One cannot do the isser of tziruf. So, the Gemara says, you're right. And therefore, what was meant is the following. So, Rav is of the opinion that it depends how much water you put in. If you put in the amount of water, which all it's going to do is just simply take the chill off of the water, so that would be fine. But if you're putting in enough water where it's going to create the tziruf, so then it's going to be aser. Now, being that I have very little experience in terms of doing this process of tziruf, so it's not clear to me exactly what that means, that if you put in enough water where it's for sure going to do tziruf, so that's going to be aser. Take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi writes, al shir lehav shir. Rashi writes, v'lo letzarif kagon shalomi leu kulo. So Rashi says that you didn't fill it up totally. And as far as Rav is concerned, so the Rav was saying the pshat like Rav Ada. In other words, Rav Ada was the first pshat that was offered. But anyway, but the point that Rashi is making over here is that when you fill it up all the way to the top, So that is creating siruf. You're basically now working. You are managing the kli itself. You're finishing off the kli, and as a result of that, that would be the makeh bepatish of the kli. So that is the shita of Rav. Shmuel Amar, back to the Gemara, afilu shir letzareif mutar. So Shmuel's of the opinion that even if I put in the amount of water, which would create siruf, so that would be fine. To which the Gemara says, now wait one second. Now this is very difficult to understand, because if you're putting in enough water, now as far as the Malach of Bishol is concerned, you're putting in so much water so that all you're doing is just simply cooling, you're taking the chill off the water. So you're not violating the Malach of Bishol. But at the same time, however, you're putting in enough water where you're going to be acting on the actual Kli itself, where you're going to be doing Tziruf on the Kli itself. The Gemara says, now wait one second. Now that's going to be problematic. It's going to be a Malacha. And now as we turn to the top of Membeza Mad Aleph, Lememra Dishmol Karebi Shimon Sfirulei. Ah. So it must be that the reason why Shmuel is okay with it is because it's a davashena miskaven, meaning you put in so much water that it could, in fact, perform the act of tziruf, and you are, in fact, going to be makeh bepatish. But really, that's not your intention. Your intention all along was just simply to take the chill off the water. And being that that's the case, so then it should be okay. Why? Because he subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that a malacha, where you are not miskaven, it's a davashena miskaven, so that would be mutter. Now, as we've gone over time and again, by davashena miskaven, when you're doing something on Shabbos where it wasn't your intention to do that, so it is going to be okay. That is a machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, and we see this time and again throughout the Masechta. Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that a davashena miskaven is mutter. Rabbi Yehuda's of the opinion that a davashena miskaven is aser, and it must be that Shmuel is in fact subscribing to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon that a davashena miskaven is mutter. And Tosfos pointed this out in yesterday's daf on Mem Aleph. You're also going to have to say that it's not a psik resha, meaning that when it's something is a davar she'eino miskaven, it has to be that A, I didn't have intention on doing the malacha, and B, the malacha is not absolutely going to result from my action. However, if the malacha is going to absolutely result from my action, this is what's called a psik resha, and according to everybody, that would be aser. So you have to say over here that the act of tziruf that's being done is not absolute, it's not automatic. Otherwise, even though it's a davar she'eino miskaven, it would not be mutter, it would in fact be aser. So you have to say that it's not a psik resha. Tosfos on yesterday's daf said that and made that point in fact. Now, the Gemara now is going to be bothered by as follows. We've just established that according to Shmuel, you can put in any amount of water that you want if all you're doing is just taking the chill off the water. So again, as far as Bishul is concerned, no problem with Bishul. As far as Tziruf is concerned, that's not your intention. So now we have Shmuel lined up with the Shita of Rebbe Shimon, that a davar she'eino miskaven is mutter, and the Gemara is going to be bothered because what we seem to have over here is a steer within the Shita of Shmuel. As we are continuing on the topic in Beis HaMadal, the Hamar Shmuel, but Shmuel tells us the following. Let's say the following. You are walking through the public street on Shabbos, and what do you discover? Is that there is hot, glowing metal in the street where people are walking. Under the circumstances, Shmuel's of the opinion that here's what you are, in fact, allowed to do. You can put it out. You can do kivui, meaning you're going to take cold water and you're going to pour it right over the hot glowing metal in order to put it out. Why? In order so that it doesn't serve as a hazard to the public. Meaning if that glowing metal is just exposed in that situation, people are going to end up stepping on it, and it's going to cause, obviously, a lot of damage, a lot of bodily damage. So what you could do at Shabbos is you could put it out, but only if it's made out of metal, but not if it's made out of wood. The obvious question, what's the difference between metal and wood? Rashi writes over here, Rashi on the top of the Amud, Gachal Shamateches, Shemashlichen Lechutz Psolo Shabarzel, people are throwing out pieces of metal. So when it comes to glowing metal, hot glowing metal, there is no malacha of kibui min haTorah. However, taking the heat out of the metal is an isur derabanan. It's kibui on a derabanan level. However, over here, because it is serving as a hazard to the public, so the Chachamim did not prevent you from putting it out, meaning in order to protect the public, you can't put it out. However, next Rashi points out, but if it's made up of wood, meaning if what was thrown out into the street was glowing coals made out of wood, there is an Isser D'Oraisa, you'd be Chayiv Skila, And it sounds pretty clear from the Gemara that even though there's a hezek l'rabim, even though it's a hazard for the public, but you can't violate a malacha d'oraisa in order to protect the public. Obviously, if there was a sakanas nefesh, if somebody's life was at stake, you could do it. Over here, it's just simply a hezek. It's just simply a hazard to the public, but it's not serving as a sakanas nefashis. You have to say something along those lines. Anyway, what comes out from the Gemara over here is that Shmuel allows you to put out the glowing metal, but not glowing wood. And now what the Gemara says is as follows. Now, if he subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon Afilo Sheitz Nami, well, you should also be able to put out the wood as well. So here now, what the Gemara has just done is as follows. And this is important, and it's subtle, but it's very important in terms of what just happened in the Gemara over here. The Gemara just said that Shmuel follows like Rabbi Shimon as far as the issue is of Dover Shein HaMaskavin. And the Gemara is finding that Shmuel over here is being inconsistent. Why? Because on a similar issue, related issue, it sounds like he wouldn't subscribe to the position of Rabbi Shimon. Now, this is a similar issue. This is not the issue of Dover Shein HaMaskavin. This is rather the issue of a Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa. Meaning, when we're talking about putting out a fire, but you're doing so for ulterior purposes and not for the constructive purpose, this files under the category of a Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa. Now, the definition of Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa, the examples are so much easier to say over. The examples of Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa is, let's say, for example, that there is a dead body in this particular room, and I want to move it out of this room into a Rishus HaRabim, because I don't want it here in this room. That's a Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa. Or another example, I'm digging a hole in the ground, but simply because I want the dirt, not because I want the hole. So in other words, the examples of Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa is, I'm not doing so for a constructive purpose, but I'm doing so simply because I want to get rid of something that is bothering me. So it is not for the purposes of construction, it's just simply for the removal of a negative condition. Okay. Tosfos throughout the Ar Masechta gives the definition of Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa, I'm not doing so for the purposes that were laid out in the Mishkan. That's Tosus's classic definition of Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa. Now, on something which is a Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa, what do we find over here? A machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Shimon. This too also is machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. The positions over here, however, are slightly adjusted. When it comes to Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa, Rabbi Yehuda says that you're chai v'karben chatas, meaning it is still a Malacha, and Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that it is pater aval asar. It is going to be rabbinically prohibited, but it is not going to be nisa d'oraisa. Here, as opposed to Dover Shein HaMaskavin, by Dover Shein HaMaskavin, Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that's mutter legamre. When it comes to Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa, Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that it's pater aval asar. Okay, so what is bothering the Gemara is as follows. We know that Shmuel's of the opinion that when it comes to Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa, he does not side with the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon. We know that he sides with the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda. And what the Gemara right now is thinking is the following. If by Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, well, by Dover Shein HaMaskavin, how can he hold like Rabbi Shimon? That's the Gemara's question. Now, when you think about the Gemara's question, you have to wonder to yourself, well, I don't understand. One is a concept of a Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa, and the other is a concept of Dover Shein HaMaskavin. They don't necessarily have to go hand in hand. And what we're going to see in just a moment is that the Gemara is going to basically make that exact point. However, before we get to the Gemara's answer, what the Gemara right now is thinking is that these two are related. If you take a look at the top Tosfos on the Amud, he writes, in fact, this very point. And I'm reading the top Tosfos. V'chim yishum desavar Shmuel k'Rabbi Shimon be'in miskaven yizbur k'mos b'mlacha shein tzarech l'gufa. And Tosfos says, as far as the Havamim is concerned, what is the thought process of the Gemara? Just because Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon by the issue of Dover Shein HaMaskavin, so that immediately means that he's going to be holding like Rabbi Shimon by Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa. And Tosfos writes, and I'm reading this Tosfos, V'yishlamer desakadacha demakshe, that the one who was asking the question was of the opinion, Devadai ha-behatalya, that as far as these two issues are concerned, they go hand in hand, meaning the Havamina of the Gemara is exactly this point. That if you subscribe to Rabbi Shimon regarding Dover Shein HaMaskavin, you're also going to be subscribing to Rabbi Shimon by Malacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa. Now, what is the relationship between the two, where the Gemara right now, in our Dafa, Mem Beis Amud Aleph, is of the opinion that these two issues are necessarily connected? So probably, Tosfos does not make this point super clear, but from this point going forward, now we're just going to explain. Probably over here, with the foundation of a malacha shein tzricha legufa and a davar shenei miskaven, according to Rabbi Shimon, where in both cases, you're not violating a malacha. Now, again, I'm just going to remind everybody the subtlety that by davar shenei miskaven, it's according to Rabbi Shimon, mutar legamri. And by malacha shein tzricha legufa, it's potter aval aser. Okay, so they're not the same, but they're both, according to Rabbi Shimon, not a malacha. It's probably residing on the fact, it's resting on the fact that in both cases, why is it not a malacha? Because it's not malacha's machsheves. Because in order to violate a malacha, to successfully violate a malacha of the Torah, so there has to be an element of malacha's machsheves. There has to be an act with intentionality. And in both in the cases of davar shenei miskaven and malacha shenei tzricha legufa, you are missing a little bit of the intentionality. Now, it's not the same. By davar shenei miskaven, your lack of intention is that I didn't want this particular result. I wanted a different result. By a case of malacha shein tzricha legufa, yes, I wanted this result, but I'm not doing the malacha as it was prescribed in the Mishkan. So it's not exactly the same, but as far as why the Gemara thought there was connective tissue between these two issues is based on the fact that the Gemara thinks that if I subscribe to Rabbi Shimon by davar shenei miskaven, I also have to be subscribing to Rabbi Shimon regarding malacha shein tzricha legufa. Good. That's all built into the Gemara's question. And then the Gemara's answer goes like this. B'davar shenei miskaven savar lo k'Rabbi Shimon, b'malacha shenei tzricha legufa savar lo k'Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says that when it comes to a davar shenei miskaven, Shmuel. When it comes to a davar shenei miskaven, so he passes like Rabbi Shimon. And by malacha shenei tzricha legufa, he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. And although I've spent a good amount of time trying to explain what links the two issues together and why the Gemara entertained the idea that if you hold like Rabbi Shimon one, you hold like the other, but the Gemara's conclusion is not necessarily. Davar shenei miskaven and Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon. By malacha shenei tzricha legufa, so Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Period. Ad kan. That brings us to the end of the Gemara's discussion over here. So there is no stira between the position of Shmuel regarding a davar shenei miskaven, which happens to be our discussion. That is that he's putting so much water in the pot. It may cause tziruf to the pot. It may be the makkeh bepatish of the pot, but he holds like Rabbi Shimon as a davar shenei miskaven. Mashenke, when it comes to the extinguishing of the coals in the street, which there it is a malacha shein tzricha legufa, he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. And since he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, we're talking about a malacha d'oraisa, and that's why we have to make a distinction between whether or not what's glowing out in the street, what is hot in the street, is made of metal, where there the isser is not an isser d'rabbanan, as opposed to wood, where there it is an isser d'oraisa. But I'm not putting out the wood in order to effectuate the wood. I'm putting it out just simply to remove the hazard for the public. That's a malacha shein tzricha legufa. Fine, but he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, and the Gemara now segregates the issue of davar shenei miskaven and malacha shein tzricha legufa. Just one more note on this Gemara over here. So the Gemara says it's okay to have a position of like Rabbi Shimon in one area and a position like Rabbi Yehuda in the other area. It happens to be that the Rambam, when he paskins the halacha, so by when it comes to davar shenei miskaven, he does paskin like Rabbi Shimon, that a davar shenei miskaven is mutter, and the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. By malacha shein tzricha legufa, he holds that it is in fact a malacha, and one would be chayv karban chatas by malacha shein tzricha legufa. So this position characterized by Shmuel, it also happens to be the position of the Rambam as well. Parenthetically, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't pasken that way. The Shulchan Aruch by a malacha shein tzricha legufa, so he paskens like Rabbi Shimon as well. And davar shenei miskaven, he paskens like Rabbi Shimon. So does the Shulchan Aruch pasken like by malacha shein tzricha legufa like Rabbi Shimon as well. Anyway, okay. Close parentheses. Back to the Gemara. Amar Ravina Hilcha Chot Bereshus Rabbi Malicha Pachus Pachus Midala Amos. So Ravina says, fine. So what we just learned together is that in order to protect the public from any kind of hazard, so what one could do is one can violate Isuri Durabana. So let's say there are thorns out in the public, meaning if there are some spikes out in the public, some thorns out in the public, where if somebody stepped on it, he would be suffering damage and injury. So what you're allowed to do on Shabbos is pick it up and you can move it. Now, in terms of picking it up, it's muksa. Okay, fine, but muksa is an issur d'rabbana. So you can pick it up because you're doing so for the purpose of protecting the public. And what you could do is you could walk with it. Remember, now you're in the Rishus HaRabim. If you walked four amas within the Rishus HaRabim, that'd be a violation of being mavir dal amas b'Rishus HaRabim. So you're not going to walk the amas. You'll just simply take enough steps where it's going to be within four amas, within a range of 6 to 8 feet. So let's just say you walk 5 feet, you stop, And so now you could do that in terms of removing it from the public public thoroughfare, and all you're doing is violating Yisra Rabbanan. But again, to protect the public, you're allowed to do that. And similarly, if a Carmelist, now if it happens to be that this is not an area of Rishus Rabbanan, it's an area of a Carmelist, so Afilu Tuva, you can walk more than 4 amos. Now remember, we discussed this in the beginning of the Masechta. You're not allowed to walk 4 amos in a Carmelist with any item, but that's an Yisra Rabbanan. Traveling in a Carmelist with an item, with an object, carrying an object in the Carmelist, is an Yisra Rabbanan, and therefore one would be allowed to do so in order to protect the public, because this is only an Yisra Rabbanan, Yisra Daraisa. Continuing in the Gemara of Al Nose V'chulei, we're moving on in the Gemara Tan Rabbanan. Nose Adam Chamem L'socha Tzonen, V'lo Tzon L'socha Chamem Divrei Beis Shammai. We are now continuing our discussion of adding water to other waters. According to the Shita of Beis Shammai, a person is allowed to take hot water and put it into cold water. But one is not allowed to take cold water and to put it into hot water. And this is the Shita of Beis Shammai. Now, it begs the question, what's the difference between putting cold water into hot water, hot water into cold water? And here we have Rashi. And Rashi says as follows, that Chamem L'soch Sonein, that one is allowed to put hot water into cold water, Dikasavet Tasa Gavar. Rashi over here is invoking a principle that we learned in Masechta Pesachim. And that is the following. When I'm introducing one item into another item, so let's say that the second item is the base item, meaning it is what is on the bottom, and that was, which I'm introducing is coming from the top, so what is going to be considered the dominant item? The item on the top or on the item on the bottom? And this, in the Gemara and Pesachim, is a discussion/debate, but we're going to subscribe to the viewpoint of Tasa Gavar, which means that the item on the bottom is dominant. And so therefore, when I'm pouring hot water into cold water, so now we're saying that the dominance is the cold water, which is on the bottom. The hot water is not dominant, and therefore no bishul occurs. Rashi writes, since we subscribe to the principle of Tasa Gavar, Ein Achamim Marsichin Es Atzonin Ela Mafshirin. So what's going to happen now is that the hot water is not going to cook the cold water. The only thing that's going to happen is that the chill is going to be removed. That's all. On the other hand, when I'm taking cold water and pouring it into hot water, because the hot water is on the bottom, and because of the principle of Tasa Gavar, so therefore now the cold water is going to be cooked in the hot water. That's the next Rashi that explains the flip of this situation. That is all according to Beit Shammai. Back to the Gemara. Beit Sila Omrin, Beit Mechamin L'Soch Sonin, Beit Son L'Soch Hamin Mutter. Now, according to Beit Sila, it doesn't matter whether you're introducing cold into hot or hot into cold, it would be Mutter. Again, with the proviso, of course, that you are putting in enough cold water so that it will not be cooking. It's just simply there to remove the chill off the cold water. So that would be fine. This is only going to be true if we're talking about a kos. Now, when we say kos over here, literally, of course, it means a cup. Rashi over here describes that we're talking about a kli sheni, meaning that when I'm introducing the cold water into the hot water has already been transferred into a kli sheni. And we're going to go back to what we learned a couple of days ago in the daf. There's no bishul that occurs in a kli sheni. Since there is no bishul that occurs in a kli sheni, so therefore there is no problem by introducing the cold water into the hot water, because the hot water has already been transferred into a kli sheni. That's the kos. But if we're talking about an ambati. Now, ambati is, I guess, translated like a bathtub. But over here in this context, the way Rashi understands it, the ambati is a kli rishon. But if we're talking about a kli rishon, so then chamim l'soch sonin, you could pour the hot water into the cold water, that would be fine. Now the reason why that would be fine, presumably, is because the hot water is no longer in a kli rishon; it's being poured from the kli rishon. Now this should sound familiar. This sounds like iri kli rishon, and because it's iri kli rishon, therefore it's not subject to bishul. Now, although I say it flatly as if that's a accepted rule, so Tosos has an extensive discussion/debate on this particular topic. It happens to be later in today's daf. Tosos again debates this very issue of how to look at an iri kli rishon. Does it have the status of a kli rishon? Does it have the status of a kli sheni? Or is it something in the middle? But right now, just to read our Gemara and learn our Gemara simply, So if I'm pouring from the hot water from the Ambati, which is a Kli Rishon, into cold water, that would be fine. However, lo tzon l'so chamen, but you can't pour the cold water into the Ambati because the Ambati is a Kli Rishon. And there is Bishul that occurs in the Kli Rishon. That is all the viewpoint of Beit Shammai. And then the end of the Braisa, so we have the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, and he simply says, it is Aser. Now, is he talking about? It is Aser. So right now, let's just assume that he's talking about what we just got done saying. That when it comes to an Ambati, I can't go in either direction. I can't go from cold water into the Ambati, and I can't even go from the Ambati into cold water. Let's assume that he's saying that. That's not super clear. The Gemara is going to clarify that point in just a moment. Amar Rav Nachman halachik Rabbi Shimon Manasseh, and the Gemara says the halach is in fact like Rabbi Shimon Manasseh. Now, sever of Yosef lemeimer seifel harev kambati. Now, Rabbi Yosef makes the following assumption that when we have a seifel is going to be like an ambati. Now, a seifel is basically some form of a wash basin, and in terms of the water is heated while it's in the seifel. So now we're going to call the seifel a kli rishon, just like we call the ambati a kli rishon. And so now here's the information that we have to put together. Number one, according to Rav Yosef, the seifel is like an ambati, and it has the status of a kli rishon. We also are going to assume that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Manasseh, like we just got done saying, and so that means that the transference of the blending of holding of cold and hot water cannot be done in either direction. You can't pour from the ambati into cold water. You can't pour from cold water into the ambati. And we're saying that that's not only true by the Ambati, that's true by the Seifel as well. Now, when you put all this information together, so it's going to result in a problem. We'll get to the problem in just a moment. Amalei Abaye, Tani Rabbi Chiya Seifel Einu Kambati. Now, Abaye is of the opinion that it was taught in the Braisa, Rabbi Chiya, that the Seifel is not like the Ambati. The Seifel is not viewed like a Kli Rishon, but rather the Seifel is viewed as a Kli Sheni. Now, what exactly is the dispute over here in terms of how to view the Seifel? Whether it's viewed as a Kli Rishon or whether it's viewed as a Kli Sheni, it's a little bit difficult for me to articulate, quite frankly, because I don't fully understand what exactly is at the issue over here as to whether or not something is deemed a Kli Rishon or a Kli Sheni. It seems to be a pretty cut and dry issue. If this was a Kli that was heated directly over the fire, it's a Kli Rishon. If this is a Kli where it was transferred from that Kli, so that's a Kli Sheni. So why we're having a discussion in terms of where Seifel belongs within the spectrum of Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, so admittedly that is a little bit difficult for me to articulate. But nevertheless, according to Abaye, a Seifel is not like an Ambati, it therefore has the status of a Kli Sheni, fine. Ulamai desalakadaitami covered the Seifel Harei Kambati, but let's go back for a moment and let's assume that the Seifel is like an Ambati and that it is a Kli Rishon. So the Amar Rav Nachman Alcha Rav Shimon Manasseh, and let's put that together with the information that we do in fact Paschal like Rav Shimon Manasseh. So the Gemara says, if all this were true, so then we would come up with a halachic impossibility, which is El B'Shabbos Rechitza B'Chamem Leika. You can never clean your feet in hot water. Now let's remind each other that we spent a lot of time over the last couple of dapim talking about what you can wash with hot water that was heated before Shabbos. And although it was a discussion / debate, let's say it simply, the only thing that you can wash with water that was heated in hot water is only going to be your face, hands, and feet. Panav yada viraglav. Those are the only things that can be washed. But the Gemara now points out the following. The hot water is the seifel. The basin, the washing basin, is the seifel. And let's assume that the Seifel has the status of a Kli Rishon. Fine. And let's assume that the Halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh. So now, you're not going to be using the water directly from this wash basin. It's too hot. But the problem now is as follows. What can I do? Meaning, I can't pour cold water into the wash basin, because as we just got done saying, that would be an act of Bishul. The wash basin, assuming it has the status of an Ambati, it's a Kli Rishon. Okay, so what about pouring from the wash basin into cold water? If I pass in the halacha like Rabbi Shimon Manasseh, I can't do that as well. And then what it leads to is the following. We, even though there is an allowance to wash your hands and your feet and your face on Shabbos, but there is simply no way of doing it because there's no way of transferring that hot water. You can't put cold water into the wash basin, and you can't pour from this particular wash basin into cold water because we pass in the halacha like Rabbi Shimon Manasseh. And so, although there's an allowance to wash your hands, feet, and face, but there's no practical way of doing so, And so we just what we result in is something which is just impossible. To which the Gemara explains, Misavas Rabbi Shimon Asefa Kai, Aresha Kai. We didn't properly understand Rabbi Shimon Ben Manasseh. What he said was simply the words Oser. He prohibits it. What's not clear is what exactly was he prohibiting. And now what we're doing is we're going to go back to the Braisa. We're going to revisit the Braisa and explain what Rabbi Shimon Ben Manasseh was in fact prohibiting. So, Misavas, were you of the opinion that Rabbi Shimon Asefa Kai that was going on the latter part of the Braisa? Aresha Kai, he's going on the former part of the Braisa. Ubeisila Matirin, Bein Cham Lasoch Sonin, Bein Sonin Lasoch Chamin. So, he is commenting on the position of Beisila. Beisila allowed the transfer both the cold water into the coast and from the coast into the cold water. Now, remember, the coast is a cliche. Rabbi Shimon Manasseh, Oser Tzonel Lesoch Amen, and Rabbi Shimon prohibits that the transfer from the cold water into the Chamen. That's what Rabbi Shimon is prohibiting. So the only thing that Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh is prohibiting is pouring the cold water into the hot water when it is in a Kli Sheni. So the Gemara says, fine. But the Gemara says, wait one second. Before we get to the Gemara's next problem. So now you understand that it's fine, meaning that the only one direction is going to be prohibited, the other direction, meaning pouring from the coast into cold water, that would be fine. Now there's a way of bathing according to Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh. The Gemara says that part's fine. But here comes the strange part. Lema Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh damar kebe shamei hachi. Meaning, yeah, we know that opinion. Meaning that opinion that you can pour from the coast into cold water, but I can't pour from the cold water into the coast. So that's none other than the Shita of Beis Shammai that we were first introduced to when we started this topic. The Gemara says, now, that's weird, meaning Rabbi Shimon Manasseh is going to be holding like Beis Shammai. Generally speaking, we don't pass like Beis Shammai. And even though Rabbi Shimon Manasseh is a Tana, and we do find sometimes Tanaim following like the Shita of Beis Shammai, but it's just very strange. The Gemara has a hard time accepting that. So the Gemara says, Hachi Kamar, the Gemara says, fine. But we'll say, is Lo Nichluku Beis Shammai Beis Sil B'davar Zeh. What Rabbi Shimon Manasseh is actually espousing is the idea that his opinion is that there never was a machlokas on this particular issue, meaning Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are in agreement that I can only go from the coast into cold water, but I can't go from cold water into the coast. Okay. Amar Rav Huna b'Reid Rav Yehoshua Chazin Leila Rava Delo Kapin Amanam. So, Rav Huna b'Reid Rav Yehoshua has firsthand testimony that he was watching Rava as he was doing this transfer, and he was not makpid. In other words, to him, as long as it was in a mano, now a mano over here means a coast, so presumably over here we're talking about a klisheni, so then it doesn't matter whether you're transferring from the cold water into the coast or from the coast into the cold water. So midatan Rabbi Chia nosin adam kito shamayim lasoch sefer shamayim bein chamin lasoch sonin bein sonin lasoch amen. And in fact, Rabbi Chia taught in a braisa that you can take a keton shamayim and you can put it into the seifel. The seifel is the hot water. And it doesn't matter whether I'm going from the hot to the cold or from the cold to the hot. So Amale Rav Huna L'Ravashi Dilma Shani Hasam Demifsek Kli. Now the Gemara at this point is assuming that we're not talking about pouring one water into another water. What the Gemara is assuming right now is that we're talking about taking a hot urn and putting it in the urn itself into cold water. Or taking a cold urn and putting it into hot water. The Gemara right now is assuming that that's what we're describing, and if that's true, so you can't draw any conclusions of what we're discussing, because we're talking about actually mixing the waters together. In the case where I'm putting the urn into another body of water, you have what's called hefsek kli. You have the barrier of the kli itself, which is going to be a slight barrier in terms of cooking. Maybe then it's limited only to that circumstance. Amar lei, so he says to him, no, ma'ara itmar. I learned that we weren't just talking about putting one urn into another body of water. We're talking about actually pouring the water one into the other. And he says, Ma'ara Adam Kitor Shamayim L'Soch Sefer Shamayim Bein Cham L'Soch Sonim Bein Son L'Soch Mayim. That one would be allowed to pour from the ketone into Mayim, and it doesn't matter whether I'm going hot to cold or cold to hot. Again, over here, we're talking about a klisheni. That's the way Rashi sets up our scenario. Under those circumstances, it doesn't matter which direction you're going, whether you're going from the cold water into the klisheni or going from a klisheni into the cold water. Under both circumstances, it would be perfectly acceptable. Ad kan. It takes us to the end of the Amud Aleph of today's daf. As a quick recap of the Amud Aleph, a discussion in the Gemara regarding Shita Shmuel, regarding the issues of Davish and Miskavin and Melacha Shein Tzrich LeGufa. Gemara's conclusion, to make a longer discussion much shorter, the Gemara's conclusion is that Shmuel is of the opinion that by Davish and Miskavin, we go like Rabbi Shimon, it's Mutter. By a Melacha Shein Tzrich LeGufa, Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda, that it would be an Isser Daraisa to do so. And then the subsequent discussion that covered most of the Amun Aleph of today is mixing together cold water and hot water. Machlok is between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, exactly under what circumstances you can mix cold water and hot water. The halachic viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon Manasseh, who is clearly machmir. What was he machmir about? An ambiguity in the Gemara. We went over a couple of positions in terms of what exactly he's being oser. And the Gemara's conclusion that as long as the hot water has been transferred into a kli sheni, so then it doesn't matter which direction you go. You could take cold water, put it into hot water. You could take the hot water, pour it into cold water, as long as the hot water has been removed from Kli Rishon and being put into a Kli Sheni. The entire way that we approach the Gemara over here is like Rashi. And just be warned, it's not the only way to learn the Gemara. In fact, Tosus, right on the daf, learns the Gemara a little bit differently. But I presented the Gemara today like Rashi. We're in the very bottom of the Mishnah, Mem Beis Amud Aleph. That if I have any kind of pot that I removed off the fire, so this is a kli rishon that you remove from the fire, so you're not allowed to put in tavlin. Tavlin are spices. Aval, as we now turn to the Amud Beis, no sinhu l'soch hakar l'soch hatamchui. But what you could do is the following: once you transferred the contents of the pot into a kli sheni, so then what you could do is you could put in tavlin, you could put in the spices. Because the kli sheni is eino mevashel. So the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lakol hu nosein, chutz midavar sheyesh bo chometz v'tzir. Now Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that you could put it into anything. Now there's a lot of pronouns over there in that sentence, so it's not perfectly clear what Rabbi Yehuda is talking about. So I'm just going to read the Mishnah, and we're going to gain better understanding of Rabbi Yehuda in just a moment. You could put it into anything. A lot of pronouns, I know. A bedavar sheyesh bo chometz v'tzir, chutz midavar sheyesh bo chometz v'tzir, except for something that has either vinegar or fish brine. Now, here's what we could say definitively. So, the vinegar and the fish brine, they are very delicate and they are susceptible to bishul even at a lower threshold. In other words, what we've described earlier, and we're going to repeat again, something which falls under the category of kalei habishul. Okay. But really, at this point in time, we don't have good understanding. We don't have good pshat in Rabbi Yehuda. E by lehu. And that immediately elicits the Gemara's question, what is Rabbi Yehuda talking about? E by lehu, Rabbi Yehuda, Aresha Kayu Lekula. Now, one possibility is the following. According to the Tanakama's position is extraordinarily clear. You cannot put anything into the Kli Rishon, even after it's been removed from the fire. Bishul can occur within a Kli Rishon. What you're going to do is you're going to take the contents of the Kli Rishon, transfer into a Kli Sheni, and now you can put whatever you want in the Kli Sheni. You can put Tavlin in the Kli Sheni. And along comes Rav Yehuda, and he's commenting on the Reisha. And he's disagreeing, and he says that once the pot's been removed off the fire, so then you can actually take these Tavlin and put it in the Kli Rishon. That's one possibility of how to understand Rav Yehuda, and that obviously would represent a tremendous kula. That the Kli Rishon that's been removed from the fire, so you can take these durable types of foods and put it into the Kli Rishon. Oduma Seifakai, or perhaps, no. What Rabbi Yehuda was not commenting on the Reisha, but rather he was commenting on the Seifa. And what he's saying is as follows. Even after it's been transferred into the Kli Sheni, you can't put Tavlin into the Kli Sheni. That's the other possibility. And now what comes out is a Chumra. And Rashi over here says, Aka'ara v'tamchui, that we're talking, that Rabbi Yehuda is modifying the second half of the Mishnah where I transferred it over to a plate. De kashari tanakama v'ka'amar le Rabbi Yehuda, b'chol karos v'tamchui modin lachutz midavar sheyesh bo chometz v'afilu kli sheni nami lo. Ah, so what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that when it is in a kli sheni, he generally agrees with the tanakama that no cooking occurs in a kli sheni. However, if you have either chometz or tzir, if you have either vinegar or fish brine, which are very delicate foods, that can't be in the Kli Sheni because they're so delicate, they're going to be cooked even within a Kli Sheni. So even as we're learning Rabbi Yehuda as this alternative approach in which he's being machmir, he's not negating the principle of klisheni. He generally subscribes to klisheni. It just happens to be that he has limitations of a klisheni, notably the chometz and the tzir. Because they are delicate in nature, so they are going to be cooked within a klisheni, even within a klisheni. So that right now gives us a very wide spectrum of what Rav Yehuda is saying. Either he's saying that a kli rishon that was taken off the fire, you can put tavlin into that. And so what he's saying now represents a tremendous leniency. That's one possibility. Or we're going all the way to the other side, and that he's being machmer even within a klisheni. Again, he's not negating klisheni, but the chomer within a klisheni is that there are things that are going to be cooked even with a klisheni. He gives two examples of chometz and seer. Okay. And excuse me. And admittedly, that is a wide range of viewpoint within the shita of Rav Yehuda. Now, continuing in the Gemara, Sefer Rav Yosef Lememar, Melech Harehu Ketavlan, Dibikli Rishon Bishla Biklisheni Lo Bishla. Now, Rav Yosef is of the opinion that as far as salt is concerned, salt is going to be treated like tavlin, it's going to be treated like these spices, and in a kli rishon, it would cook, just like the spices will cook in a kli rishon. In a kli sheni, however, it will not cook. Salt will not cook within a kli sheni. Amalei Abai Tani Rabbi Chia Melech Einu Ketavlin, Dibi Kli Sheni Nami Bishla. Now, Abai says that it was taught in a brisa Rabbi Chia that salt is not going to be like tavlin. Tavlin was viewed as something which was durable, but salt is not going to be viewed as durable. And even in a klisheni, it's going to be mevashal. So we have a debate over here regarding how to view salt in terms of it is something that is durable and is not going to cook in a klisheni, or is it something which falls under the category of kalei bishal and it will be cooked within a klisheni. Upligi the Rav Nachman, Damer Rav Nachman. Now he argues with the Rav Nachman because tzricha milcha bishula kibisra detura. That as far as the cooking of salt is concerned, in order to cook salt, salt takes the amount of heat to cook it as much like the meat of an ox. I mean, you say that the meat of an ox is very tough and it takes a lot of cooking in order to cook it. And Rav Nachman's of the opinion salt operates with the same principles. And therefore, it takes a lot of heat in order to cook salt. So he's going to be siding with the idea that salt is a durable food, and it's not going to be cooking within a klisheni. Now, in a slightly different version of this discussion, Rav Yosef says that salt is like tavlin, where in a kli rishon it will cook, but in a kli sheni it will not cook. Now, in the second version, Abaye comments, but his comment goes in the other direction. Abaye says that salt is so durable and is so tough that it doesn't even cook within a kli rishon. Now, this actually is supportive of Rav Nachman because Rav Nachman is of the opinion that salt is like the meat of ox. Just like the meat of ox is really tough and requires a lot of cooking, so too does the salt. And so therefore, within this version, it comes down now that salt can be added to a kli rishon once the kli rishon has been taken off the fire. So the Gemara has given us a wide range in terms of how to view salt, in terms of adding it to a hot food on Shabbos. The range now is either the salt can be added to a kli rishon after it's been removed off the fire, because salt is such a durable food and salt requires so much cooking in order for it to be considered mevushal, so it can be added to a pot, a kli rishon taken off the fire. The middle position is that salt can be added to a kli rishon, but salt can be added to a kli sheni, just like tavlin doesn't cook in a kli sheni, neither does salt cook in a kli sheni. Or the other possibility is that salt is so delicate that it cooks even within a kli sheni. Obviously, over here, there is a lot to discuss in terms of halacha lamaisa. It really, this small amount of Gemara that we did really impacts tremendously on practical halacha regarding when you transfer any kind of food from a kli rishon to kli sheni. So now, what can you add to that food after it's been moved into kli sheni? There are numerous variables over here. Even within the Gemara, we are not given a straight answer, even regarding the addition of salt to a kli sheni. And so in terms of the halach lamaisa, I apologize, but I'm going to punt over here in terms of halach lamaisa. There's so many variables that are operating over here in terms of what to do. So consult halachic works. Start with the Mishnah Berurah, but there are many good works that were written in English in terms of what can be added to food after it's been transferred into a kli sheni. But just from the Gemara itself, we are given a wide range of viewpoint, and it's really hard to conclude on nearly anything just from that which the Gemara has provided to us. Certainly, what we see from the Gemara is that even though we subscribe to this principle that Eklishen Yizena Mavashel, but we certainly see in the Gemara that there is a possibility that certain foods are delicate in nature and can even be cooked within a Kli Sheni. That is certainly an idea that's being expressed in the Gemara, and that opens up a bit of a Pandora's box in terms of the Halacha L'maisa, in terms of what could be added even as something has been transferred over to Kli Sheni on Shabbos. Continuing in the Gemara, we are now starting with the Mishnah. I'm going to start the Mishnah over here, and we are now transitioning. In the third parak, since the third parak has begun, so we have been discussing the ideas of Bishul, both before Shabbos, what can you do in order to set up the food going into Shabbos, and that was the first Mishnah of our parak in Daf Lamed Vav Lamed Beis, all the way transitioning to the last couple of blot of Gemara, where we talked about Bishul on Shabbos itself. So the first half of the third parak of Shabbos is dedicated to the topic of Bishul. And now we're going to be transitioning. The second half of the third parak of Shabbos deals with the issues of Muksa. There is much to talk about in terms of introducing the topic of Muksa, and so I will not use this as the opportunity, although it is a great opportunity to speak about Muksa just from the more general standpoint. But right now we're just going to read the Mishnah, we're going to go through the Gemara of the remaining part of today's daf, and in the future we're going to speak about Muksa on a more general scope. The Mishnah starts off, one cannot put a utensil underneath a lit candle in order to collect the oil. However, if you do that before Shabbos, it would be mutter. And even if you do set it up before Shabbos, so it's collecting the oil, nevertheless, you cannot use that oil on Shabbos. That oil on Shabbos is going to be muksa. Let's just deal with the first half of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that one is not allowed to put a kli underneath the ner on Shabbos. Why not? Take a look at Rashi over here in the Mishnah. Rashi writes, "A nosnim b'Shabbos kli tachas aner." One is not allowed to put a utensil underneath the lit lamp on Shabbos. Rashi writes, "I'm reading the Rashi inside." L'kaba b'shemen metaptef mishum d'shemen muksahu. So the shemen itself is muksa. When we say muksa over here, what we mean is that this oil is earmarked for burning, and therefore this oil now for any other purpose on Shabbos would be muksa. And again, without a proper introduction to the topic of muksa, so we all basically understand that one is not allowed to use the oil for anything else. One is not even allowed to move the oil for anything else. So over here now, what we're describing is the Mishnah's Isser, that I can't even put a kli underneath in order to collect the oil. But that demands an explanation. I'm not moving the oil. I'm just simply collecting it on Shabbos. Why is one not allowed to do that? So Rashi over here offers two explanations in terms of why not. And I'm continuing in Rashi. The kasavar ain't kli nital b'Shabbos el tzorach davar hanital. So one possibility is that, yes, you're allowed to move kelim on Shabbos. Meaning when you have a kli, so you can move it. But only for non-muksa purposes. I can't move a kli on Shabbos for muksa purposes. So basically, an extension of muksa is that not only am I not allowed to move muksa on Shabbos, but I can't move a kli for muksa as well. That's one possibility, says Rashi. Inami, Rashi offers an alternative explanation of the Mishnah. Kasav rasa levato kli meichano, lo shiv kli b'makom shalo yucha od lit lo. Rashi says, what's going to happen? If I take this kli on Shabbos and I put it underneath the lantern, now when I say underneath the lantern, by the way, I'm not talking about picking up the lantern. That obviously would be a violation of muksa. What we mean to say is that simply that oil is dripping out of the side of the nair, and I'm just putting a kli in that area to collect that oil. Why would that be prohibited? So within Rashi's second explanation, it's because of the following. Once now oil drips into that kli now is going to be a base for muksa. And what now happens on Shabbos is that I can't move that kli. And I'm going to reread this Rashi. Aser levato kli mehechano. What you have just done is you've taken a kli out of play on Shabbos. And by putting muksa in it, by allowing muksa to drip in it, the kli now becomes no longer usable. And Rashi continues. So, shelo yucho od lit lo misham. I can't move that kli anymore from that location. Have kekovea lo makom. Umechabra betit. And Rashi says, and now basically what it's like is that I'm taking this kli and gluing it to the table. And it's as if I'm being mechaber, as if now I'm connecting the kli to the table. V'dami l'malacha. And it's similar to a malacha. V'klize mishibobo hashemen hamuksa yehe asur l'taltalo. By virtue of the fact now that it's collecting the oil, I can't move this kli, and it's like I am gluing it to the table. It's kind of like bonnet, kind of like building. And as a result of that, you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. But obviously, within the second Pshat of Rashi, we're not saying it actually is bona, but it's so similar to bona, so that therefore the Chachamim prohibits such an activity. So, in the first psak of the Mishnah, so you cannot take a kli and put it underneath the nair in order to collect the oil if you're putting it there on Shabbos. Setting it up before Shabbos would be fine, but even as you do so, we learned in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to benefit from that oil on Shabbos. Gemara starts off the discussion. Amar Rav Chista Afa Pisha Amar Ein Nosin Kli Tachas Tanagol Sakal Beit Zasa. So even though one is not allowed to put a kli underneath the hen that is about to lay an egg, Avakofa La Kli Shaloti Shaber. But here's what you're allowed to do. Now the egg that's laid on Shabbos is Muksa. The first Mishnah in Beit Zasa teaches us that an egg that is laid on Shabbos or on Yontif has the status of muksa. Actually, it's given a special status of muksa. It's called nolad. And so what you cannot do is that you cannot put a kli underneath the hen in order to collect it. Basically, it's very similar to our Mishnah. The egg is muksa. To put a kli underneath in order to collect it. So again, we can go with either pshat within Rashi. The first or second pshat, either one of them works. One is not allowed to do so. But here's what you're allowed to do. After the egg has been laid and after it's on the ground, you could take a kli, overturn it, and put it on top of the egg in order to protect the egg. Amar Rabba, my time of the Rav Chista, Kasavat Tanglos, Asuya Lehatil Beit Zasa, Ba'ashpa, Ve'in Asuya Lehatil Beit Zasa, Be'makom Adron. So, the reason behind this allowance of taking a kli and putting it over is because we're going to look at the general nature. That when a hen, generally speaking, lays an egg, it does so Be'ashpa. Now, literally, that means in the garbage, but it just simply means in a place that is a area designated as a refuse area. And it doesn't normally do so in a mako madron, not on an incline. And vahatzala mitsuya, and generally speaking, this is something which was expected. And meaning that the protection of the egg is something that we anticipated going into Shabbos. And so therefore, so in order to protect the egg on something which was expected and something which is mitsuya, it's common, so that was allowed. Vahatzala she'ena mitsuya lo hitira. However, if it's something which was not expected and not common, so that is not allowed. So the reason why one is allowed to take a kli and put it over the egg is because, again, we don't run into the problems that we described earlier. You're not mevat kli me'echa, no. And you're not moving the kli for muksa because it's not under the muksa. It's on top of the muksa. And so therefore, under these circumstances, it would be okay, provided that this is something which is common and something which was expected. Now the Gemara is going to make a couple of challenges over here. We're just going to read to the bottom of the Amud. So first, Va'atanya, let's consider the following brisa, Nishbar lo chavishel tevel, Barosh Gago. So let's say you had tevel on the top of your rooftop, and the tevel obviously is muksa on Shabbos, and the barrel breaks, and now the tevel is lying down on the top of your rooftop, and it's exposed, and maybe kliyam aneich tachtav. So the Gemara says, so what you're allowed to do now is on Shabbos, you could take a kli, put it over the tevel in order to protect it. Now, what the Gemara is wondering over here is that we're only allowed to do this if it's something which was common and expected. The breaking of the barrel on the top of the rooftop was not something which was common and expected, and therefore there should be no heter over here. The Gemara's response is, "Begupi chal echadati d'shchichi d'paki." So the Gemara says, no, we did expect it, because it happens to be that what we stored it in is brand new utensils, utensils that have not does not have a history of being good, and therefore we did actually expect expect them to break, and therefore you would be allowed to take a kli and overturn it over the tevel in order to protect it. Eitzvei, the Gemara challenges again, nosin kli tachas aner l'kabel nitzotzos. One is allowed to take a kli and put it under the nair in order to collect the sparks. And the Gemara says, nitzotzos na mishchicha. The Gemara says that's something which is common and expected, and therefore one is in fact allowed to do it. We'll stop over here and we'll pick up the muksa discussion tomorrow. And in the future, Billy Neder, we're going to go through a more thorough job in terms of introducing the issues of muksa, as we are now going to be spending the next 5 blot of Gemara going through muksa. That's the second half of the third parak of the Masechta. First half of today's daf ended off our discussion regarding Bishul as far as the Gemara is concerned. We finished the first half of the third parak of Shabbos regarding all the issues of Bishul as discussed in the Gemara. Our topics today revolved around issues of tziruf, of adding cold water into a hot pot, and the possibility that you are going to be mitzarif, that you're going to be finishing the pot itself, the machlokus between Rav and Shmuel, Shmuel subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon, Davar Sheina Miskaven is mutter, even though Shmuel himself to hold about Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, he passes like Rabbi Yehuda. We went through the discussions of what you're allowed to do in terms of blending together cold water and hot water, under what circumstances it would be okay, machlokus between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Manasseh, and that was the first half of today's Amud. And the second half of today's Amud, we continued along the lines of Bishul. We talked about transferring food from the Kli Rishon to the Kli Sheni. Once you do so, you can add tavlin, you can add spices into the Kli Sheni, because the Kli Sheni is Eino Mevashel. Then there was a Shita in the Mishnah of Rav Yehuda, not clear what Rav Yehuda was actually saying, and the Gemara gave us a range of understanding what Rav Yehuda was saying. The Gemara's discussion regarding salt, is salt something which is delicate or durable, something that requires very little cooking or something that requires a lot of cooking? And the Gemara brought in a very large range in terms of how to look at the properties of salt. And then finally, the end of the daf today, we went through and we started the second half of the third parak of Shabbos, and we talked about the issues of mukzah. Putting a kli underneath a lantern in order to catch any dripping oil is something that you're allowed to set up before Shabbos, but you cannot do on Shabbos itself. And Rashi gave a couple of explanations of why that is. Both explanations are mukzah related, as we are now starting the topic of mukzah. And then the idea that we express in the Gemara that when the chicken lays the egg, you could put a kli on top of the egg in order to protect the egg for the duration of Shabbos, and that would be allowed because you're not putting the kli under the egg, you're putting it on top of the egg, and this is something okay, provided that this is something which is expected. The chicken laying the egg is obviously something that is expected, therefore you're allowed to do it. The Gemara challenged with a couple of braces, but the Gemara successfully defended the position of Rav Chisda.